Good morning, all, and welcome. I'm glad to have everyone here this morning. It's happy to be able to address you this morning and bring you a lesson. I hope it will be fruitful for you. A few very brief remarks to introduce this before I begin. One is, this lesson will be a little bit unusual in not only lessons that I give, I think, but lessons that you will often hear here and in other congregations, in that the meat of my lesson is not going to focus, I'm not going to call out specific scriptures as much as maybe is normal. I know I have heard often enough that people note that when they come into our services that we open the Bible and we speak from it. And I'm definitely going to begin with some scriptures and I'm going to end with some scriptures, but in the middle not so much, so that's unusual. Secondly, as I think John said something kind of similar last week when he had his lesson, or one of them, and he said sometimes we like to come to a lesson that's going to make us feel better, and I apologize, this is a lesson that's maybe not really designed to help us feel better. Maybe it's even designed to make us feel a little bit bad, not really with ourselves, but maybe to generate in us some anger, and like Christ had on at least one occasion, some anger with a purpose. But I hope at least to keep you engaged and hopefully to help you all, help all of us. I have mentioned that my purpose in bringing lessons when I have an opportunity like this is most of the people are going to be in the audience are going to be Christians already. So I'm helping you or trying to help you to live and to serve in a way or more effectively. But in a way that you want, in a way that is pleasing to Christ and pleasing to God. So hopefully this will be one of those lessons. So as I said, I'm going to begin with scripture. Begin with a passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 9 and 10. Here Paul writes, "I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people, not at all meaning the sexually immoral of this world or the greedy and swindlers or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world." So Paul may be being a little tongue-in-cheek. You know, he's about to talk to them about somebody who was a member of their congregation, somebody who was professing to be a Christian who was engaged in sexual immorality. And he says, look, I know that I can't ask you to have nothing to do with people who are sexually immoral or idolaters or swindlers, because then you would have to completely remove yourselves from the world. And he says, that's not what I have in mind. Now, various religious traditions, Christian and otherwise, have had in the past this monastic tradition in some circles where you almost literally took yourself out of the world. You remove yourself from the people, at least, of the world and the influences of the world in order to devote yourselves to God. And there's some value in doing that, perhaps, but it doesn't seem to be what it is that Paul was saying that these people should do. It doesn't seem to really be what God wants us to do. Or at least, at the very least, you read what Paul says here, and you can't conclude that that's necessary to be able to be pleasing to God. So what Paul is saying to these people and what Jesus and all of the teachings that we have from God has been asking us to do is to go live in the world. You've got to do it. You've got to eat. You've got to provide for yourselves. But also you have a job to do while you're there. But he says to us, go into the world. Live in the world. At the same time, we know and we hear over and over again things like this in 1 John chapter 2 and verses 15 to 16, do not love the world or things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and the pride in possessions is not from the Father, but it is from the world. So it starts off right there, do not love the world. It says, you want to live in it, I need you to live in it, but don't love it. And this is challenging for us. It is absolutely natural, for example, for us, whether we're here in this building or whether we're out at our jobs or out there in the world some other way, to want people to love us. We want people to like us. This is, if you don't have that desire for people to like you and to love you, that's halfway down the definition of a psychopath. This is normal. This is expected. This is what you are supposed to do. You want people to like you and to love you. And it is perfectly natural also that the world then, as we are out in it, is going to want us to like it. The world is going to try and get us to love it. In some ways, the devil is acting there, but really, it's to be expected. This is natural. This is what the people around us are going to do. So that's difficult. We're admonished, despite all that they try, despite that natural longing for those people in the world and for the world as a whole to want us to love them, we are not to do so. We're not to, at least in the way that he's talking about here, don't find yourself drawn into that trap. Do not love the world. James 4:4 elaborates and says, "You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God?" That's one of those 12th grade vocabulary words, enmity with God. Basically, he's saying, though, that's to be an enemy with God. It's the same root word. Do you not know that friendship with the world is to be an enemy of God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. So, it's difficult for us. We have to live in the world. We're not supposed to love the world. And in fact, if we do find ourselves in loving the world, we find ourselves in actually being enemies with God. So we can't be friends with the world. Friendship with the world is enmity with God. Okay, so we can't be friends with the world. So, but we have to live in it. So what do we do? One of the things that we may kind of find ourselves doing, or a good way to describe it, is the title of my lesson. If you've heard it before, if you saw it in the bulletin, we may find ourselves being frenemies with the world. Right? So we've heard this word. Okay, this may be something you might encounter in another situation, other situations where you have to interact with or you have to deal with people that you don't like or that you might even describe as enemies. Maybe you have, you know, perpendicular plans for something at work or whatever's going on. This, you encounter somebody in the workplace that you have this problem with, or outside of work at children's soccer team or whatever it is, you run into these people that you don't want, you don't find yourself really wanting to love them, let's put it that way, but you have to deal with them all the time. Like we have to deal with everybody when we go out into the world. So what's one of the things that can happen in that situation? Well, sometimes you become this thing that we sometimes call frenemies, right? So You have to deal with this person at work. So you come in, you're like, "Oh, hey, how are you? How was your weekend?" You go to lunch with them. Maybe you pick up a card for them if they have something happen in their family. But really, you would rather they just quit. You would rather they leave. But you maintain this, you need this kind of friendship relationship with them too. So we know this. We understand this relationship that can happen. So the question is, do we become frenemies with the world as we're living and we have to go out there and do our jobs and earn our livings? And here's the thing, though. A frenemy relationship is usually mutual, right? You don't have this relationship with somebody and they're completely oblivious to it, usually. And you don't have this relationship with somebody and really they like you to death. They love you to death. No, really they would rather you jump off a cliff as well. So, if we're trying not to love the world, but we're out there and we find ourselves in this kind of relationship, we ought to really ask ourselves and look at ourselves and say, what is the world really doing to me? What is it that if I'm being frenemies with the world, what is the world doing if they're being frenemies with me? And that's where it gets kind of really scary. One of the things that we really value, I think, is when we have this kind of problem with somebody, and somebody is, something that goes along with this term is betrayal, right? Backstabbing. They'll come along and you think they're helping you with something and they're actually sabotaging you. Or you think that, you know, at least for decorum's sake, they're going to say nice things about you to somebody else, but then you find out they're actually really saying really nasty things about you behind your back, right? And you value, I think, if that's happening, when somebody comes to you and say, "Look, I know you're trying to get along with this person. I know maybe you think this person is your friend, but I have to tell you some of the things that they're doing. I have to tell you some of the things that they're saying about you behind your back, so you know what's going on. So part of my lesson this morning is I want to try and do this for you. I want to try and help you to understand what it is that the world is doing and saying about you behind your back. And like I said, this may not be pleasant. This may make us somewhat angry. But what is it that the world says to our face? What is it that they really try and make us think and believe about them? Well, there's lots of things. We are Christians, right? We believe in God and we follow a certain moral code, an ethical code that comes from His Word. And they say things that are very nice that make us feel like, oh, they're fine with this. They're great with this. They're okay with this. So we hear things from people like this. So tolerance implies no lack of commitment to one's own beliefs. Rather, it condemns the oppression or persecution of others. Former President John F. Kennedy. I'm a Christian, and I wanted to let people know that that's on what's on my mind. It's important to me that I grow and walk and raise my family with Christian values. Kanye West. But let us never believe that the freedom of religion imposes on any of us some responsibility to run from our convictions. Let us instead respect one another's faiths, fight to the death to preserve the right of every American to practice whatever convictions he or she has. Former President Bill Clinton. Or, I think tolerance and acceptance and love is something that feeds every community. Lady Gaga. I meant to go and find her actual name so I could cite it, but we know who that is. These are the types of things people say about us or about their faith to our faces. That makes us feel really good, right? Let us fight to the death to preserve the right of every American to practice whatever convictions he or she has. That makes us feel very welcome. That makes us feel very secure in this country. We all know, for instance, very well in this country, the First Amendment that begins with Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That goes right along with that sentiment we just read, that we should feel comfortable and secure and not fear just because we follow a particular religion, because we follow Christ and we want to adhere to His Word fully. And there are still many reasons to feel that way and to be proud and feel comforted by the fact that this is in the law of our nation. It goes beyond that, though, really. It's not just our nation. So the United Nations in 1948 adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Okay? So the United Nations, this is part of their ethos and something in their code. Article 18 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights says, everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change his religion or belief, and freedom either alone or in community with others and in public or private to manifest his religion or belief in teaching, practice, worship, and observance. The United Nations has adopted this as a tenet. They went further than that. I'm bringing out specific things that you'll find out why in a bit, but the General Assembly of the United Nations in 1981 said, in their declaration on the elimination of all forms of intolerance and of discrimination based on religion or belief, that in Article 5, the parents, or as in the case may be, the legal guardians of the child, have the right to organize life within the family in accordance with their religion or belief and bearing in mind the moral education which they believe the child should be brought up. Further, every child shall enjoy the right to have access to education in the matter of religion or belief in accordance with the wishes of his parents, or, as the case may be, legal guardians, and shall not be compelled to receive teaching on religion or belief against the wishes of his parents or legal guardians, the best interests of the child being the guiding principle. The United Nations has said this about, and I have children now, has said this about the way I raise my children. I have the right to raise my children with the principles and with the education that conforms with my religious beliefs. Literally, the world has said this. There's their logo right there. So this is what it is saying to us. But I began to find something different. One of the reasons that I was kind of inspired to put this lesson together. I put it together in 2017. Some of this stuff may be a little bit dated, but it's still very relevant. I started to see in just, so I'm a computer guy, all right? I'm a computer programmer or a software engineer when I feel fancy. And so I read a lot of news in that area, right? So technology, gadgets, computers. I began to see in these publications that really have nothing to do with philosophy or religion or really even science as a primary thing. Just so many statements that went counter to what it is that the documents like this are saying to me, what the world is saying to my face. And then I go and I happen to read something over here that the world has written, and it's very, very different. So just to begin there, so here's a good article. It's a site called Ars Technica. Now this site has a little bit of a science bent, but it's really about technology. It's about computers and gadgets and things like that, and there's a little bit of a science focus on that site too as well. But I was surprised really even then at the tone that I saw in this article. Now it's possible today for us to just kind of stovepipe ourselves and only watch one news network, or only watch and listen to certain radio shows. And at the very least, if we think like there's parts of the world that are after us, it makes us feel like there's a large part of the world that has our back. Right? Now, if you don't do that, and you actually start to expose yourself to what should be neutral sources, neutral environments like this one, you may get a little bit upset. So again, this is from a tech news site. And the headline here, you can already see, creationist sues national parks, now gets to take rocks from the Grand Canyon. And it talks about somebody who is, part of an organization that's looking into Christian evidences, and he wanted to, you have to put in a request to take samples from the Grand Canyon. Otherwise, every tourist would take his souvenir and the Grand Canyon would be gone, right? But so he put in one of these requests. And there's just this tone of ridicule that you can't miss in this article. The article, the writer says, alternative facts aren't new. Young Earth creationist groups like Answers in Genesis, from whom this person was representing, believe the Earth is no more than 6,000 years old, despite actual mountains of evidence to the contrary. And they've been playing the alternative facts card for many years. In lieu of conceding incontrovertible geological evidence, they sidestep it by saying, well, we just look at those facts differently. Not that anything he collects will matter. We already have evidence that is consistent with the great flood that swept the world. Again, in actuality, that hypothesis is in conflict with the entirety of Earth's surface geology, they write. And I read this, and I read other things in other publications, and I'm like, so first of all, you're a business. You want to attract readers. Apparently you think that none of your readers are going to be offended by this. Apparently you don't think I'm one of your readers. Furthermore, apparently you think that nobody that's going to read this has friends like me or people that they respect that hold these views that are going to be turned off by this because, well, you're being pretty harsh to these people that I know and that I like and that I love. And they're not worried about chasing off any readers with this. And that started to worry me a little bit. This is not their bread and butter, but they took this out and took this tone. And there's really just this ridiculousness that they seem to feel about us. They really think this guy is a complete idiot, despite actual mountains of evidence to the contrary, right? So they ridicule us. The world ridicules us. Let's look at something else. Have you ever seen this? Let me just get a show of hands. Has anybody ever seen one of these on a car? No? Does anybody know what that is? Raise your hand. Oh, wow. Okay, this is going to be interesting. So, it's a little sticker. It's the back of a Toyota 4Runner. Silver plate. And, of course, you've seen the little fish stickers. on the back of a car, right? So you see a similarity there. It's kind of got that same, you know, circle section and two, and there should be like a tail there, but instead there are these funny things and googly eyes and these little squiggles. This is a sticker that somebody put on their car, and I used to drive in behind one at the hospital where I worked for a little while. It is the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Has anybody heard of the Flying Spaghetti Monster? Okay, somebody may have heard of that. Okay, right. So the Flying Spaghetti Monster is the deity of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, or Pastafarianism. Pastafarianism is a social movement that promotes a lighthearted view of religion and opposes the teaching of intelligent design and creationism in public schools. According to adherents, Pastafarianism is a real legitimate religion as much as any other. It is legally recognized as a religion in the Netherlands and New Zealand, where Pastafarian representatives have been authorized to celebrate weddings, where the first legally recognized Pastafarian wedding was performed in April 2016. However, in the United States, federal judges ruled that the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster is not a real religion. Flying Spaghetti Monster was first described in a satirical open letter written by Bobby Henderson in 2005 to protest the Kansas State Board of Education decision to permit teaching intelligent design as an alternative to evolution in public school science classes. In the letter, Henderson demanded equal time in science classrooms for Flying Spaghetti Monsterism alongside intelligent design and evolution. After Henderson published a letter on his website, Flying Spaghetti Monster rapidly became an internet phenomenon and a symbol of opposition to the teaching of intelligent design in public schools. So if you see this on a car, they are making fun of you. There's no other way around it. This is them trying to ridicule the faith that you have, and certainly ridicule people that put the little fish symbol on their car to try and say that they follow Christ. There are so many things that you could go off from this. It's like, can you imagine if we had something that, some kind of symbol that was to ridicule Islam or Judaism, that we wanted to stick on our cars, that we would be fried, castigated. Nobody would stand for it. But despite all those nice things that we read about us, it's perfectly okay for people in the world to ridicule us this way. The problem is that once something is ridiculous, it's not worth protecting. The society doesn't view something that is silly or stupid or foolish as worthy of protection. So, moving on to something else. So, this was another set of world events that caught my attention. So, I've had children. I have a 5- and a 6-year-old. So, a few years ago, we were looking into this question. Is this something that we want to do? And I ran across this. German court says, a German court has ruled that parents can't have their sons circumcised on religious grounds in a move which has angered Muslim and Jewish groups across the country. And that's interesting enough. You would think that in a country with the history that Germany has, doing anything like this that would be directly in conflict with the Jewish faith would immediately sound alarm bells. And that they wouldn't be able to get away with that, whatever their grounds are, is because it would be too politically hot to touch. So that's crazy enough. But what really got to me was reading the comments, I know. And let me reiterate to you, never read the comments on any article that you find in the internet. But I did. And these are the ones that are fit to print. Okay. So fully half of them were stuff that I would not put up on the projector here. But at least fully half of the rest, or fully half of the ones that I could put up here, were really much like this. And it's not the type of, you know, question that I raised to you. It's ridiculing this practice. It's like knocking your teeth out so you don't need to brush. Cleaning behind your ears hard is too. Van Gogh had the right idea. This is why I sold my house instead of cleaning it. And then somebody else says, no, that's why you burned your house down instead of cleaning it. So really ridiculing people that would do this for any reason. And then down here. If only we could apply a similar law in the U.S. And these are these are not translated. These are English-speaking, seemingly American commenters, by the way. Genital mutilation of an infant is abhorrent and should have been banned by all forward-thinking states long ago. Pandering to archaic practices like circumcision is turning a blind eye to child abuse in the name of religious tolerance. Well done, Germany. Fantastic, much-awaited logical decision. So this particular religious practice, which seemingly would be protected by those United Nations statutes that we read about a few minutes ago, is abhorrent, is child abuse, and should have been banned by forward-thinking countries long ago. Let's think about that idea of child abuse. Now, this man and this name you very well may recognize, Richard Dawkins, a very, very outspoken atheist and promoter of evolutionary theories and those sort of things. But he says here, and this is an article from 2015, speaking at Trinity University in Ireland, he says, children need to be protected from religion. And he says, you have to write off those people who put the Bible ahead of science. So write us off. You just need to write those people off. But that's not even the concerning part of it. So children need to be protected from religious indoctrination in schools, biologist and atheist campaigner Richard Dawkins has said, backing a campaign by atheist Ireland to overhaul our education system. Speaking to the Irish Times in advance of a public talk at Trinity College, Dublin, on Tuesday evening, Professor Dawkins said, there is a balancing act, and you have to balance the rights of parents and the rights of children, and I think that balance has swung too far towards parents. Children do need to be protected so they can have a proper education and not be indoctrinated in whatever religion their parents happen to have been brought up in. Wait a minute. Isn't this exactly what we read about in the United Nations Declaration on Elimination of All Forms of Religious Intolerance in 1981? Isn't he advocating the violation of a fundamental human right here? Well, no, that was just what the world told us to our face. This is what they say behind our back. Professor Dawkins was in Dublin on the second leg of a pair of talks organized by his Arizona State University's Origins Project, which is aimed at promoting public understanding of science. And that sounds like a commendable aim. He doesn't stop there, though. In another article from 2013, he gave an interview to Al Jazeera where Mr. Dawkins said, horrible as sexual abuse no doubt was, the damage was arguably less than the long-term psychological damage inflicted by bringing the child up Catholic in the first place. And the reporter interviewing him says, you believe that being brought up as a Catholic is worse than being abused by a priest? That's what he said. And he says, Professor Dawkins replied, there are shades of being abused by a priest. And I quoted an example of a woman in America who wrote to me saying that when she was 7 years old, she was sexually abused by a priest in his car. At the same time, a friend of hers, also seven, who was of a Protestant family, died, and she was told that because her friend was Protestant, she had gone to hell and would be roasting in hell forever. She told me of those two abuses. She never got over the physical abuse. It was yucky, but she got over it. But the mental abuse of being told about hell, she took years to get over. So Professor Dawkins says that us telling our children about hell is more psychologically damaging than any other thing pretty much that you can imagine doing to them. Putting that away for a second, returning to the first article, Lawrence M. Krauss, another person speaking in the same summit, said his plea for reform was backed by Professor Krauss, who said parents, of course, have concerns and say, but they don't have the right to shield their children from knowledge. That's not a right, any more than they have the right to shield their children from health care or medicine. So we don't have a right to shield our children from the promotion of the understanding of science any more than we have to shield them from health care or medicine. That particular analogy is interesting to me, and so I'm going to diverge from my slides here for a minute and just tell you a story that one of my coworkers at my last job, something that happened to him. So he had a teenage daughter who was in school. This was when we were in Germany, and so it was a Department of Defense-run school on the base. he was calling his medical insurance company because there was some kind of mistake. He had been charged for Depo-Provera injections. Okay? And so that is an injectable female contraceptive, right? He said that I have not received this service. Nobody in my family has received this service. Why is this on my bill? Well, it turns out there had been a mistake, a rather substantial mistake, and I wonder who got in trouble for it. So here's the thing. His daughter was in the school there, 16, I think. And so the counselors or whatever from some program had come to, I don't know if they talked to just the girls or if they talked to all the students, but they basically told them, look, we have a program to make available to you contraceptives, and if you choose to avail yourself of this program, your parents will not be informed. And so his daughter had said, okay, yes, I would like this, and by some error, the charge actually showed up on his insurance, and so he found out about it that way. So he doesn't have the right to shield his children from healthcare or medicine, like Professor Krauss states. Let me just ask you. So if you had a friend, if you had a family friend that came into your house and you know, had a relationship with your children, and one day that friend goes to your teenage daughter and says to them, hey, just if you're interested in getting contraceptives, let me know. I can help you with that, and we won't tell your parents about it. Is that somebody that you would want to call your friend? Is that your friend? This is what the world is doing to us, or doing with us, or doing with our children, behind our backs. So despite all those things that they may say that make us feel comfortable and secure, the world is not our friend. Just another example. So, again, you see in the header here, Wired Magazine. Now, that's one you might have heard of. You might have seen that on the shelves. This is Technology and Gadgets Magazine. Now, something has happened in that these technology companies have taken over the entertainment industry, okay? Netflix, Amazon Prime, Apple. And so all of this mainstream media stuff has all of a sudden become technology news. So that's how an article like this even gets in here. The Handmaid's Tale is a show that was available on Hulu, one of these over-the-internet television services, right? You guys know the basic theme and the idea of this. I said this is a little dated. This has been out for a couple of years. I think they're coming out with the second story here, the second season of this, or they already have by now. So it's a dystopian thriller, okay, about dystopian means, you know, this is like something big has happened. The world has basically ended, and this is what it looks like afterwards. Dystopian thriller in which a Christian theocracy overthrows the U.S. government. And one of the things they do is they force fertile women to bear children for high-ranking government officials. There are fewer fertile women, and so they decide this is what they're going to do. So basically, some people look at us as being people that might do something like this. Again, this is a tech news site. This is a mainstream magazine on technology and computers, right? But they're talking about this show. So this is an excerpt from the article. Writer Sarah Lynn Mishner, okay, so the writer for the show, the writer of the book that this is based on, is named Margaret Atwood. Writer Sarah Lynn Mishner agrees that the show hits close to home. She says that it's no coincidence since Atwood based everything in the story on real historical events. Wait, what? Okay, never mind. It's not irrational for us to fear this. Given that these are things that you can find in other cultures, or in our culture in different periods, or in our culture in the present. Okay. Mishner, who was raised by conservative Christians, wishes more people from that community would watch The Handmaid's Tale, which she thinks might cause them to question some of their more extreme views. I went to a Christian high school, she says, and they would never have read The Handmaid's Tale. They would never have had us read The Handmaid's Tale because it's too political. Okay, or there could be other reasons. But the commander and Serena Joy, okay, these are two of the villains in the show, feel so much more real because I know people who are exactly those people. Okay, I'm going to be like the literally police here, the exactly police. Okay, you don't know people who are exactly those people. But this is what she says. She She knows because she was raised in a conservative Christian environment. But I know people who are exactly those people, she says. They may not be plotting to overthrow the government. May not. They may not be plotting to overthrow the government. But in terms of the repression that Serena Joy has and expressing it in really unhealthy ways, that's something that I've witnessed in a lot of Christian circles. Thankfully, I got out and I was able to rebel and completely remove myself from that environment. But when you're raised that way, you see so many similarities and you're like, oh, I know that guy. I have so many stories growing up of people who were like that. So a few things to take out of this. One is, clearly, this person sees us as people that, well, we may not want to overthrow the government. We certainly would, you know, do the kind of horrible things that happened in her show. It's totally plausible. Second of all, and this is the thing that maybe you haven't really thought about this way, or maybe you've thought that this was conspiracy theory type thinking, but it's not just that these things that we see on TV and these things that we see in movies are just happen to promote these values because they're popular or they're common or because they get people to come in and they make money. Something you should note here is this person is saying outright to your face that she is doing this, she is putting this show out there, and she wants people to change their positions. She wants people to see this and move in a particular direction. That's not a conspiracy theory. Okay? You could see her say it right for herself. We live in the world. We get so much out of the world. We get all this wonderful entertainment and all of these wonderful benefits and healthcare that is so wonderful and all of these things. And it's difficult not to want to embrace all of these things. But this is what people are doing. This is what people are trying to do to us and are trying to do to our children and to everyone we know. She clearly thinks that we're capable of these things. We're capable of this kind of extreme behavior. Well, that's the thing about extreme is it's a relative term, and you can use that term pretty much how you like if you want. Now, you may have heard about this a few years ago. I think it's still going on, but this really blew up in 2015 and 2016. Russia, the government of Russia, basically banned the Jehovah's Witnesses group, and the reason that they put behind it was that it was an extremist organization. Okay, now there are a couple of reasons for that, but one of them kept coming up. One of them in particular kept coming up. Russia's top prosecutor is threatening to ban the Jehovah's Witnesses for alleged extremism. Sivolsky says the accusation of extremism is based on a false understanding of Jehovah's Witnesses' assertion that theirs is the only true religion. So the basis for the label extremist is that theirs is the only true religion. Prosecutors have alleged that that means they are promoting religious discord. And of course, it's totally wrong, Sivolsky says, because every religion feels that they have the only true religion. That's the nature of any religion. Why are you following a false religion? Some opponents of the Jehovah's Witnesses say their claims are more than just polite disagreement, though. And so here's the other side, somebody else justifying this ban. They say, in their literature, there are some very harsh statements and very insulting statements about other faiths, says Alexander Dvorkin, the former Russian Orthodox priest who now teaches the history of religion and cult studies at St. Tikhon University in Moscow. Of course, every religion has the right to criticize other faiths, but that should be done in a non-insulting manner, especially if you are talking about the faith of the majority. And therein you can kind of really see maybe a little bit of the motivation here. There are other things going on under the surface here, which is, you know, hopefully we wouldn't face this particular problem, but the Jehovah's Witnesses are a very well-organized group with a structure. And as I had read that basically the argument was that the Russian government felt that that structure was dangerous to them. But this is the justification that they use. They pin this extremist label on them because they are teaching that theirs is the only true faith. So that should hit a little bit close to home for us. There's a video on this. I can share you the link that just kind of goes through this and shows some of the things that we're doing. Looks like they are having materials planted in their libraries that were being used against them, for instance. It's really remarkable what can happen despite all of those things that we read in the beginning of the lesson. So the world calls us idiots and mocks us, calls us abusive to our children, calls us extremists and would-be murderers, calls us things we don't even know what they mean without looking them up. And that's just among other things. Let's just look through a couple more here. So other things that are said, you know, if you aren't looking for them, you might miss them. But Seth MacFarlane, okay, if you know that name, he created the Family Guy cartoon, just another name in Hollywood. It says, atheism is like the civil rights movement. There have to be people who are vocal about the advancement of knowledge over faith. Stephen Fry is a popular British entertainer. You may or may not know him, but he said in an interview, it's perfectly apparent that God is monstrous, utterly monstrous, and deserves no respect whatsoever. The moment you banish him, life becomes simpler, purer, cleaner, more worth living, in my opinion. Religions vary in their degree of idiocy, but I reject them all. For most people, religion is nothing more than a substitute for a malfunctioning brain, Gene Roddenberry. I'm a Star Trek fan, so that one, you know, kind of gets me a little bit. And the day will come when the mystical generation of Jesus by the Supreme Being as his father and the womb of a virgin will be classed with the fable of the generation of Minerva in the brain of Jupiter, Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to John Adams, April 11th, 1823. I don't know if that one comes as a surprise to you guys or not. But some of the myths that we are told about these, maybe from even within a church setting, about the piety of the founding of our nation are tinged with some other truths that may be a little less pleasant. This is what the world thinks of us. As we're drawing this lesson to a close, I just would love to come down here and take every single one of you by the lapels and shake you and say, listen to me, I'm your friend. I'm trying to tell you the world is not your friend. This is not somebody you want to be friends with. Look at these things that they're saying about you. You have a successful marriage, 40 years with the same woman, happy marriage. You're a tyrant, possibly a rapist. You're intelligent. You have a successful career. You have a PhD. You believe this stuff, you're an idiot. You have children that you've raised in the nurture and admonition of Christ, and they're faithful and they're good examples, and you've succeeded in that, you're a child abuser. That's what they think of you. That's what they think of us. Why would you want to be friends with these people? Of course, Jesus tried to warn us about this. He was very, very explicit with us, and he told us exactly what was going to happen. John 15, if the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master? If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will also keep yours. But all these things they will do to you on account of my name, because they do not know him who sent me. Whoever hates me hates my Father also. If I had not done among them the works that no one else did, they would not be guilty of sin. But now they have seen and hated both me and my Father. But the word is written in their law must be fulfilled. They hated me without a cause. He's warned us of this. There is, however, something in what he is and what he has said that kind of goes counter to all this. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15 and 16, we already read, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. But of course in John 3:16, Jesus said, for God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. We understand the difference. We understand that while we live in the world, we cannot find ourselves in love with it. That doesn't stop us from having an obligation and having a need to still love these people and try and bring them to us. Now, I say these things to you for a number of reasons. As I said at the beginning of my lesson, what I want to try and do is to help us, to help you, to live the life that you've dedicated yourself to. For those of you who are Christians here today, you have a difficult task. But it's made much more easy by recognizing that the world that you are living in is not your friend. We have this point in our worship set aside. If you are a Christian and you've found yourself too in love with the world, if you've found yourself apart from us and fallen into those things, you have the opportunity to repent. We have this tradition where you can come up to the front and ask for forgiveness and ask for prayers. Now, if you're here and you're not a Christian and you're searching, then you're in the same boat with us, that you believe in these things and the world says the same things about you. If that's the case, come and be baptized and find the friendship that you will not find in the world. Any of these needs we can help you with today, you can come forward at this time as the song has been selected, it's been sung.